Could we avoid all this if we just put in a carbon, like if we unrepealed the carbon price?
That's a crazy good idea. We know carbon prices work. It reduced emissions 2% when it was operating for the 2 years from 2012 to 2014, and the economy grew 5%. If we had it, it'd be in a really strong position if it still had that in place. It doesn't. It has nothing. And so it will feel the full force of the EU's carbon price.
One for mum, one for dad, and one for the country.
And there has never been a more exciting time to be an Australian.
Budgets are about choices, Fran, and you show what you value through the choices you make.
Dead, buried, cremated.
This is coal. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared.
Australia's basically done for. We'll just end up being a third-rate economy. You know, a banana republic.
How good is Australia?
Just follow the money.
G'day, and welcome to Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's podcast demystifying the big economic issues in Australia and putting them in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Australia Institute, and today we're going to be talking about how the European Union, or the EU, plans to level the playing field for its carbon-intensive industries as it tries to achieve net zero emissions by 2050. It recently announced a whole suite of ambitious policies designed to meet this target, one of which is something called a Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism, or a CBAM, as we've taken to calling it here in the office. And this policy in particular could have big implications for carbon-intensive Australian exports, which have been polluting for free ever since Tony Abbott repealed Australia's carbon price.
The idea of a carbon border tax is gaining ground in the United States and the European Union.
A carbon border tax to level the playing field for European products if other countries do not go as far as us or refuse to go in the right
direction. Carbon-heavy imports will be met with tariffs.
Basically, they're calling it a carbon border adjustment mechanism.
They're going to be inevitable, and I think it won't just be the European Union. I think it would be the US is looking at it as well. I wouldn't be surprised if the UK gets on.
Australia is going to face trade penalties if we don't do more on climate change, aren't we?
Change on this scale is never easy, even when it's necessary.
Show us what's on the menu and show us what it costs and we'll decide whether we're going to eat it.
It's technology, not taxes, that's going to solve this problem.
If we get to minus 55 in 2030 and climate neutrality in 2050, humanity has a fighting chance.
So today we're talking to Richie Merzian, Director of the Climate and Energy Program at the Australia Institute, and Hannah Melville-Ray, who is an Ann Cantor Fellow at the Institute, to unpack exactly what a CBAM is and why Australia should care about it. G'day, Richie. G'day, Hannah. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks Pleasure. For having us.
So, Richie, firstly, what is a carbon border adjustment mechanism?
Yes, what is a CBAM? So, given the EU has just upped its ambition, locked in its net zero target, but also will at least halve its emissions, get to 55% by the end of this decade, it can't keep giving a free pass to its most high-polluting industries. So it will bring on a carbon price for those sectors like steel and aluminium, and to make sure that they don't become uncompetitive, will tax imports in those same goods coming in. So it's basically a border carbon tax to make sure that goods that are coming into your jurisdiction face the same carbon price as your local production.
So it's about having a level playing field.
That's right.
And so, Hannah, why is the EU in particular the first out of the gate with this? And are other countries going to be looking to do a similar thing, do you think?
Yeah, so the EU, they are expanding their emissions trading scheme in order to meet that ambitious target that Richie mentioned. And as they do that, they have to start phasing out their free passes that they're giving to some of the most polluting industries. And as they do that, then their domestic industries are going to feel like they've been disadvantaged compared to imports that don't have to pay for this carbon price. So that's why on July 14th, they just announced the world's first proper proposal for what this would look like. And as the world's largest trading bloc, they really have the expertise to pull something off like this and to really recreate global trade to be in line with climate-friendly policies.
So they're the first out of the block, Richie, but they're likely to be heavily influential on other countries, basically.
That's right, yeah. I mean, they're the world's largest trading bloc, as Hannah mentioned, the third largest economy, if you look at it as one jurisdiction. But they're also experts in trade law, given the intra-trade amongst their 23 members. So they're going to set the new norm. They're setting the rules up. Companies are adapting to how they're going to operate. And we already know that the UK will adopt this. They're probably going to be the fourth most impacted country. The US are looking at something similar. So are all the other members of the G7 as well. So this will really set the trend.
Look, it's deeply concerning. We don't know how they're going to make it WTO compliant. We are absolutely committed to meeting our Paris targets. We've met our Kyoto targets, and that's something that many members of the European Union didn't seem to understand. I'm happy to tell them today.
So the Morrison government is claiming that this is basically protectionist and really critiquing it as against World Trade Organization kind of rules and obligations. Is that the case, Hannah?
Well, according to the WTO, which is the global authority on trade, they've actually said that carbon border adjustments can be compatible. They say that their rules are actually supposed to be used as a compass and not a barrier to creating this carbon border adjustment, the CBAM. So while the Australian government may claim that it's protectionist, this is really a climate policy, and the global world trade experts are saying that and backing that.
This is not a tariff. A tariff is about protecting your local goods by making imports more expensive. Very much was popular back in the day, especially when you had industries and manufacturing industries that you were trying to protect, like when we had our car manufacturing industry and we put a 5% import tariff on foreign vehicles. Now, this is not that, because it's the same cost that will be applied to local goods as it would be imports. Therefore, it's a tax, not a tariff. It's a levy, not a tariff. If you hear tariff, then you know that it's someone who's just trying to push an argument that is protectionist when it won't be. This is not trade protection, it's climate protection, and there's a real big difference.
And you have to figure the EU knows something about, as the world's largest trading bloc, something about designing these.
Absolutely. You know? So essentially, when the CBAM comes into effect, Australian companies will just be making up the difference between the lack of a carbon price in Australia and the EU's carbon price. And that's why we say that it's leveling the playing field.
Carbon-heavy imports will be met with tariffs, something Canadian exporters could avoid thanks to Canada's federal price on carbon.
If it can be shown that a carbon price has been paid for the embedded emission in those imported goods, that amount will be removed from the importer's bill. By addressing carbon leakage in this way, companies elsewhere will be incentivized to green their production processes. And the CBAM would also encourage foreign governments to introduce greener policies for industry.
Could we avoid all this if we just put in a carbon, like if we unrepealed the carbon price?
That's a crazy good idea. We know carbon prices work. It reduced emissions 2% when it was operating for the 2 years, from 2012 to 2014, and the economy grew 5%. If we had it, we would actually be on a level playing field. In fact, when I was at the Department of Climate Change, there was regular working group meetings with the EU who were designing their emissions trading scheme at the same time about how the two would connect. Australia would be in a really strong position if it still had that in place. It doesn't. It has nothing. And so it will feel the full force of the EU's carbon price.
If and when, Richie, the EU passes the CBAM, what impact is that going to have on Australia?
It's likely the EU will pass this. The parliament voted overwhelmingly for this proposal to come forward, and over the next year they'll negotiate it through their countries and parliament. When they do bring this in, it will have a modest impact on Australian companies, given that there's limited trade in exposed emissions intensive goods, a little bit of iron and steel, for example, which will be directly impacted. It's the indirect impacts that are most interesting. So, for example, the coke and coal we send to China, that then gets made into iron and steel, that will ultimately face a carbon price when it gets to the EU. So how will those costs be passed down the supply chain, down the line? That's really the most interest. And then the second is, this will probably expand beyond the EU, the UK, the US, but also in our neighbourhood in Japan. And when that happens, much larger trading partners are involved and probably a much larger impact.
Australian steel and aluminium exports worth $20 billion will be affected, while Chinese products made with Australian coal are likely to be the worst hit.
So, Hannah, where Richie's talking there about the impacts on some of our industries, but not exactly many Australian industries are exporting directly to the EU. But the report that you helped co-authored, also looked at things like alumina and our aluminium exports. Why are they likely to be impacted?
Essentially, the industries that will be impacted are the ones that are both polluting, so they're carbon intensive, but they also have to be export dependent. So alumina and aluminium in Australia, that makes up the majority of our emissions intensive trade exposed industries. And actually, when you look at these industries, already 64% of our aluminium metal is going towards countries that have a carbon price or that are considering carbon pricing. So while the conservative voices potentially in Australia are saying that CBAM won't have an effect, that's really because they're focusing just on the EU, when really what we know is that this has potential to really cascade into new global norms. And when that happens, of course, all of our industries that are highly polluting because they might run on coal or are dirtier compared to our competitors overseas, they will definitely feel these impacts.
And the report mentions that those industries, particularly alumina and aluminium, are worth about $12 billion in exports at the moment. Richie, is there any capacity for those emissions-intensive
trade-exposed
industries to clean up their act? Do they have to be coal-powered?
Yeah, there sure is. Look, emissions-intensive trade-exposed industries. You can blame Penny Wong for that acronym. they were called ETs back in the day of the CPRS. There is an opportunity. So if you look at aluminium, for example, it's basically like congealed electricity. It just uses tons of electricity. And on mainland Australia, that is coal-fired electricity. So if you shifted that to clean electricity, hydro or renewables, then you can go ahead and clean up your act. And that exists overseas. In fact, Australia only has only a minority of aluminium smelters around the world run on coal-fired electricity. So Australia really isn't the minority there. And there's an opportunity to hedge our bets, to clean up our act, and to do so before these CBAMs start biting.
Sorry, so can I just check that? Because that sounded like actually a bit of news to me, so it might be to listeners as well. But other aluminium smelters run on clean energy elsewhere in the world already? That's a thing that actually happens already.
Yeah, about 50% of...
50%, not even like a other small than avant-garde.
Yeah. So other than China, about 50% run on renewables, about a quarter run on gas, and only a quarter run on coal, compared to in Australia, where there are three smelters that produce 90% of our capacity, and they all run on coal.
So big opportunities there, actually.
Absolutely. So,
yeah. And the other thing to note is that oftentimes it's the same companies that own these aluminium smelters. So like Rio Tinto and Alcoa, they own them. So they own clean ones that run on hydro in Canada. They run on geothermal in Iceland. They run on gas in the Middle East, right? So if, as Rio Tinto, I've got net zero by 2050 and I need to go ahead and clean up my footprint, where am I going to look at putting my efforts, potentially transitioning or closing down sites that are really dirty? It would probably be Australia. So we've got even more incentive to decarbonize because everyone is moving in that direction.
Yeah.
But as long as industrial installations outside the EU are not subject to similar ambitious measures, these efforts can lose their effect. This is why we need the new CBAM, an environmental policy tool that will equalize the price of carbon between domestic products and imported goods for certain sectors.
Can Australia just stick in its head in the sand on this? Can we just kind of pretend it's not happening?
Certainly trying. The federal government, with its kind of protectionist rhetoric, is doing that, which means that it is losing the ability to engage constructively. There's an opportunity to shape what the EU does with the revenue it raises, you know, how it will actually work the technicalities of these embedded emissions, what credits you could use to offset the imports if they did go down that path, apart from just using the EU's ETS credits. Maybe we could use Australian ones. So there's all these kind of technicalities you can work through if you engage constructively, which we're not doing. And that's the real opportunity lost. So let's drop the protectionist rhetoric. Let's engage constructively, because these CBAMs are coming and they're only going to grow in terms of the jurisdictions that adopt them.
I think that Richie's really summed it up well, in that we do have an opportunity to engage. And they're really important questions that, even though we do have this proposal on the table now, that are still unanswered. So we don't know where the revenue from the CBAMs will go. And really, we should be looking at setting up potentially an independent body that can help assess the carbon content of imports, or helping least developed countries transition in their clean energy sectors, so that they can engage and feel less impacts from climate change, but also from this transition that's happening globally. And also, I think Australia is well positioned to engage, because our businesses have had to do carbon accounting since 2007. So we can, if we choose to, really add value to these conversations. And this is exciting because it's being formed right now, and it would be a missed opportunity not to engage in that.
Mm. Any final thoughts, Richie?
Just one from our Energy and Emissions Reduction Minister, Angus Taylor.
It's technology, not taxes.
Whose preference when it comes to climate action is technology, not taxes. Well, the taxes are coming, and they're coming from the outside, and the worst thing we can do is just sit there, pay money to other countries to invest in their economies and green them up, while we just keep getting more and more dirtier and uncompetitive. So this is the perfect time to actually switch, because there's sticks in play, not just carrots.
Unfortunately, that's not the plan. But that's all we've got time for today. Thanks very much for your time. This episode was recorded on Tuesday, the 20th of July, and things may have changed since recording. You can visit australiainstitute.org.au for all our latest research, including the CBAM report that we released in June. We're on Twitter at the Oz Institute with an AUS. My Twitter handle is Ebony_Bennett with a double N double T. Richie Merzian is at Richie Merzian, and Hannah Melville Ray is at Hannah Mel Ray. That's HANNAHMELREA. Our producer Jennifer Macy is at Jennifer Macy, and our theme music is by Jonathan McFeet from Pulse and Thrum, with additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Stay safe out there, particularly everyone who's stuck in lockdown, and thanks so much for listening.